If we can remember back to ancient history, we're in mitzvah Shin Lamed 330, which is mitzvah Sfira Sheva Shabbosot Shanim, the mitzvah to count the seven sets of years leading up to the Jubilee, the Yovel year, which is the most special year in Jewish law. Mishor Shia Mitzvah, we're one paragraph down in my edition. Mishor Shia Mitzvah, the reasoning behind the mitzvah is as follows. Alzad Hamshat, according to the basic understanding, as opposed to getting all mystical, Sheratza Hashem Lehodia La'amo Ki Akol Shelo, that we're not supposed to get too attached to our material possessions, which has always been a major problem throughout history, but especially nowadays that people can afford a lot more stuff in general, the average person, that we get very attached to our material possessions. Ulvasof Yoshu Koldavar La'asher Chafetz Hu Lidna Batchila. So God created a year every 50 years that our land goes back to the original owner. We don't just get to keep land in Eretz Yisrael forever. Okay, it doesn't apply to all material possessions. You don't have to give your car back to the person you bought it from if it's been 50 years since you bought your car. I mean, You do not.
No.
It doesn't apply to all material possessions, but real estate is where people get the most invested, the most emotionally attached, perhaps, to their homes, their fields. So therefore, they have to give those up during the Yovel year in order to make clear that we've internalized the idea that the land does not, in fact, truly belong to us. It belongs to God. Kimu shekasuv ki li haaretz. It says, God says,
do you get it back the land in is the mine. Next year?
No. It goes back, again, the Eretz Yisrael is divided into areas for each shevet. Each tribe and each family has its own land.
Yeah.
So that land is supposed to stay within the tribe and within the families. The point is, if you sell it to someone else who doesn't really belong there, then it goes back to the original owners at the Jubilee year.
So were there actually any sales then? I mean, of land? Or basically, it could be like a 38-year lease or something like that.
Basically. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they're working on leases now. That's the whole drama with the selling of the land in Yerushalayim. But they're in places like Wachovia neighborhoods.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay. But formally, it's a sale. It's a sale that reverts as opposed to a lease.
Yeah.
Okay. V'im mitzvah zo shel sfira shana shana yarchiku atzvam shelo yigzlu karka chaveram v'lu yachmedu abalibam. So the point is that why do we... So every 50 years, just do it. Why do you need to count? This is year one of the Oval. This is year two. This is year 26. This is year 43. Why do you have to count each year of the Yovel? And of course, when you get to each cycle of seven, you say this is year 14, which is two Shemitah cycles of the Yovel. Okay. So the point that you have to count every year is you have to remember this idea that if you have to remember that Yovel is coming, that if every 50 years, they just sounded the shofar and they're like, okay, all fields back to their original owners. What? I think we did this 50 years ago. Not all of us remember, and all of us were born. This is weird. This is crazy. We're not giving up our fields. But if every year you count, this is your year one, this is year two, this is year of the Yovel. So you remember the Yovel year, you remember the Jubilee every year, and you remember that any sales of land that you transact are going to be going to revert back during the Jubilee year.
As a matter of fact, isn't there some uncertainty as to what which year is the Jubilee year?
Yes, there is.
So it's not a theoretical concern that people are, if you don't announce it publicly and so on and so forth and count publicly.
Well, not in those times. Nowadays, we don't have to count it publicly because, we're not 100% sure when the Jubilee year is, but also the Jubilee year is not in effect.
Yeah. At some point, in other words, we lost track. In other words, that's
right. At some point, we lost track of the Jubilee year, but okay. B'daitam ki akol shav la'asher chafetz hakel she'tiyelo. So it goes back at the Yovel to the owners that God really wants to own this land. V'inyan zeh shel Yovel domek tzas l'mashenog la'asos l'malchusa da'ara. So the idea of the Jubilee year is similar to what is done in earthly kingdoms. What's done in earthly kingdoms? Shelokhin adnos mizman lizman me'ari habitziros asher lesarehem. So sometimes the king takes control of the cities that are ruled by the noblemen. Lahazgir lahem yiras adon. So to remind them who's really boss, that if the king just sat in the capital city of the country and didn't, you know, had nothing to do, just demanded a tribute or something from the noblemen and didn't actually exert his control over the cities of the nobility or the areas of the nobility directly, so the nobility might get this idea that, you know, hey, we could forget about the king. We should just create our own little city-states and we can rule ourselves. We don't even have to worry about the king and his laws at all. Right. So sometimes the king takes direct control. This is the same thing. So God says that I want the land to go back to the people who are really supposed to own it. So same thing too. All slaves are freed. All Jewish slaves are freed. And the Eved Ivri, so are freed. And he should go back to God's ownership, so to speak. The slave should not be owned by another human being, but rather it should be solely responsible to God. What's the reason that a king would do this to his nobleman? To remind him who's boss. I want you to remain to remain afraid of me and to make sure you're subjugated, but that's not what God's concerned about. That God doesn't care about reminding people who's boss. If you forget that God's boss, so you're in trouble. So then, okay, there are other ways to exact vengeance. God did it only for people's good, that they should return the land to the original owners and do what's good in God's eyes and therefore receive merits, points in heaven for this for performing God's will in this manner. Because God wants to do good for us. So he was talking now the rational understanding, potentially, of the mitzvah. But he's going to get a little bit into the mystical understanding of the mitzvah. Kivo nirmaz kol yemei olam b'shanav. That with the counting of the Jubilee year, there is a reference to all the days of the world and its years. What does this mean? What on earth does this mean? Gam binyan hashviyo shenitztavinu limnos hashanim sheva sheva velo shmona shmona tisha tisha opachos man. What he's trying to get at over here is God likes the number 7. That the number 7 is a very mystical number, and the world is built upon the number 7. So, there are 7 years in a Shemitah cycle, and not 8, or not 9, not less than 7. Gam bezeh amru sheish inyan shel chachma gedola v'tova. This, the Kabbalists say, there is a great wisdom in this number. Yiduhem velo yirtzu lemosor lechol adam. So the great Kabbalists know this, and they don't wish for every Pashat Yid to know exactly what the mystical secrets are behind the number 7. Daf ki lo niglal lanu sodam, hishgachnu badavar zeh. So I said, the Sefer Chinuch is saying, okay, I don't quite understand exactly what the Kabbalists are getting at, because I'm not a great Kabbalist myself. Apparently he wasn't, okay? But he said, but this is what we think this is going on. Ki ha'umnam hekev ha'shviyos, sodor baharbe mi mitzvoseinu. That a lot of mitzvahs involve 7. Hinanu machazikin b'melechas shishas yamin v'shviyin nishbos. Every week. We work for 6 days, and we rest on the 7th day. Navod adama sheishanim v'shviyin nishbos. We work the land for 6 years, and we rest on the 7th year. V'achar sheva shviyo shoshanim gamken nishbos shanachas. And after 7 cycles of 7 years, we rest for 1 year in the Jubilee year. V'zeu ha-yovel shebanu alav. This is the mitzvah that we're talking about now, which is the yovel. What are more 7s in the Torah? V'hinei chag ha-pesach shu shiva yomim. Pesach is 7 days, midaraisa. V'chag ha-sukes gam kmo ken shiva. V'achar ha-shiva nochu gatzeres. You don't see, it's interesting that God doesn't say there's a festival in the fall, right? There's a Jewish festival in the middle of Chodesh Tishrei. So, for some reason, God wanted it to be 8 days, but God doesn't just say, do it for 8 days, it's an 8-day festival. No. Can't work. It has to be 7, and then another 1 tacked on. We can't have a unit of 8. There has to be a 7 and then a 1. Uchmoche nimna sheva shabasos v'pesach adatzeres. This is a mitzvah that should be familiar to everyone at the present time, which is the mitzvah of Sfiras Omer. So counting down from Pesach to Shavuos, we have 7 weeks, and then right afterwards, you have the holiday of Shavuos. V'achar minyan ha-shiva nachol chag ha-tzeres. Uchmoche nimtza krisas bris shudavar nasa l'kiyum inyan al-cheshbon shiva. We find that sometimes when people make a covenant with one another, or a treaty, or a pact, it has to do with the number 7. Kibol shekasuv, what does it say in the Chumash, or the leaning for Rosh Hashanah? Kiyas sheva kivasos tikach miyadi. The Avram says to Avimelech, here, take for me 7 sheep, in order that it should be a testimony that I dug this well. Why 7 sheep?
Sure, 8 days of Bris Milah, but okay. Yeah. Well, the name of the place was Be'er Sheva, so...
Right, that's afterwards, according to this. Afterwards, yeah. Kisham Nishbu Shneyam. It doesn't say because the number of lambs. It says because that's where they took a vow. Okay. But also Be'er Sheva, also, according to Harry, alludes to the number 7. Okay. The Bris Milah is on the 8th day, but it's like 7 days and then the 8th. I mean, it doesn't express it exactly in that way. The Torah always says on the 8th day. Okay.
All right, well,
okay. Some say the reason that Bris Milah is on the 8th day. V'chein Bilam Shayachacham Asa Shiva Mizbachos. That in Parshas Balak, we know that when Bilam is trying to curse the Jewish people, so he tells Balak to build 7 altars. So 7 is a number that is very cosmically significant. Uchmochein Lashon Shivua Shu Miturgam Kiyum Amr Minachachamim Shu Nigzar Miloshon Shiva. So maybe, like Harry said, that relating to Be'er Sheva, that the Lashon of Shavua, of taking an oath, is related to the number 7. That the 7 is like the establishment of something. V'chein rabim lo alisim ata b'fi'iti. Lots of examples of the number 7 in Jewish law. Okay? V'ata b'ina yakir tizke v'tachkor v'tir b'das v'tovin b'dvarim. He says, okay, I'm not writing anymore. You, my son, have to do your research, and you do your research and get back to me. I'm not spoon-feeding you all the examples, okay? I'm trying to encourage you to become interested in this topic. V'im tishal, you can ask a question. Lama chiyavu zichronim levracha limnos hashanim sheva sheva midichsiv v'sofarto lecha. So it says you should count for yourself 7 units of 7 years. Oh, so it said the part of the mitzvah is you have to actually verbally count, right? The Beis Din has to say at the beginning of each year, today is year 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever of Yovel. Velo ra'inu me'olam sheyimne hazav yemei sfiro velo hazava yemei sfira sa. Be'afal pi shekasuv bahem v'safar lo v'safar la. It says when a person who is suffering an unusual emission, we know that has to count 7 clean days. And it's insufficient that for a regular emission, so very briefly, you have to basically, or as soon as the emission is over, more or less, you can go to the mikvah. But for an abnormal emission, so you have to be emission free for 7 days before you can go to the mikvah and become tahor. So it says that they should count 7 days. 7 clean days, and then go to the mikvah. So does that mean, according to this, since it says you have to count, so does it mean that in the first clean day you have to say, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaMashiach Kishon Mitzvosav V'tzivanu Al Sfira Zivus Hayom Yom Echad L'Ziva or L'Shiva Nekiyim, L'Shiva Nekiyim, whatever, Yom Yom Echad L'Shiva Nekiyim, Yom Shnei Yomim L'Shiva Nekiyim. No, we never heard of such a thing. That's not what it means. Nobody ever heard of nowadays we don't have a Zav and a Zava really in terms of the Tumah V'Tara aspect of it, but we know that contemporary Hilchos Nida has been practiced for the last almost 2,000 years, is that a woman, even if she's having a regular period, or she thinks she's having a regular period, any woman who has a blood flow treats herself as if she were a Zava, that she has to count Shiva Nikiyim. Has to count 7 clean days after the conclusion of the period. So, in other words, we never heard of a woman saying today is the after, you know, on day one of Shiva Nikiyam. Today is day one. Today is day two. Today is day three. Today is day... Never heard of such a thing.
Oh, they counted somehow.
What they have to do is Shechayovim Sheyidnu Leiv Al Hayomim. They have to pay attention to make sure that the correct number of days are passed. So in other words, you know, if let's say a woman makes her Hefsek Tara on Tuesday afternoon, so then even if she doesn't count at all in her head during the intervening days, as long as she just thinks, oh, I'm going to the mikvah next Tuesday night, and as long as all my bedikas, all my examinations are clean in the meantime, so I'll have no problem going to the mikveh at that time. And she doesn't even think about the individual days in the meantime, so that's perfectly acceptable. She doesn't have to count day by day by day. Avaloshi is chayvu limnosam bapeh ulevarech al minyanam. Not that she has to literally count every day. Today is day one, today is day two. So how could this be? Why do you have this difference between the counting of the Yovel years and the counting of the Shiva Nikiyam? When they use the Torah, uses the language of counting in both places. Chuvas davar zeh, mashik damti lach berosh sifri, what I explained to you in the beginning, ki kol inyan ha-Torah toloi beperush ha-makubal, that the whole way we function with the Torah life is that we go based on the received interpretation of the Torah. You can't just read the Torah. You can't just be a little kid and learn Hebrew. You could call it that, I guess.
No.
So you can't just be, you know, a little kid learning Hebrew, and you read the pasuk and you decide what it means. That's ridiculous, obviously. Everybody in every work of literature, lahavdil. So you need to have some seichel in terms of how to interpret it. You can't just come up with your own crazy interpretations of how to do it. So we have a received interpretation of how to interpret the Torah, and that's what we go by. So we don't understand the first thing about the Torah. You'll think there are verses that contradict each other. You think all these things if you don't know that there's a received interpretation of the whole thing. Everything about the Torah is good and clear, and if you know it properly. So the received interpretation of the Torah is, when it says you have to count the years of the Yovel, it means you have to verbally count. But for the counting of a Zav and a Zava, that you have to count Shiv and Nikiyam, seven clean days, it doesn't mean they have to actually count the days verbally, or even mentally think today is day one, today is day two. It just means you have to pay attention to the fact that 7 days are clean. That this is the minag of the Jews in all places. And he concludes with this expression that even if they're not prophets, they're the children of prophets, which means, but the strange thing that about the Sefer Chinuch using this phrase here is that it seems to be inappropriate. You know, in the classical literature, before, you know, this phrase means that if the Jewish people look like they're doing something questionable, then if it can be justified, so you use this rhetorical phrase of, even if they're not prophets, they don't have a direct line to God, they're the children of prophets, the descendants of prophets, so therefore what the Jewish people are doing has divine influence and blessing to it, because they're the descendants of prophets, so they have some way to tap into the will of God, even if it's not directly by God speaking to you. But this phrase doesn't seem to be appropriate here, because nobody ever said that a Zava or a Zav has to count verbally the seven clean days. So here it sounds like, really they should, but since you see that the women have the minhag that they don't verbally count the days, so okay, let them continue with their minhag, because even if they're not prophets, they're the children of prophets. But here, nobody cast aspersions on this minhag. That's the halacha. Nobody ever said that they had to count Shiva Nikiyam. So I don't quite understand why the Chinuch uses the phrase here, but okay. It's interesting to note that Tosfos gives an alternative explanation as to why you don't have a bracha and a verbal counting of Shiva Nikiyam, is because that the Shiva Nikiyam can be undone. That, let's say, a woman says, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaMashiach Yishanu Mitzvot Sivanu Al Shiva Nikiyam, Al Sfira Shiva Nikiyam, And Hayom Shnei Yomim L'Shiv Nekiyim, and the next day, whoops, you start to bleed again. So therefore, the last two brachos were not really correct because they weren't for her Shiv Nekiyim. So based on this, right? Okay, but you have a principle that you don't make a bracha if there's a good chance that the bracha can become undone. That's why some people recommend, we have the chumrah that if you miss a day during Sfiras Omer, for example, so then for the rest of Sfiras Omer, you're not allowed to make the bracha on the counting of Sfiras Omer. Choshesh for the opinion of the Behag, even though most Rishonim disagree with this. They say you are allowed to continue making the bracha even if you miss a day. So we concern ourselves to the opinion of the Behag that you're not allowed to make a bracha if you count anymore. That's why the poskim say that somebody who's very forgetful, or let's say somebody's going on an around-the-world flight during Sfiras Omer and they'll cross the day line and miss a day of Sfiras Omer, so you don't start counting with a bracha because it's almost certain that you're going to miss a day. So you don't even start at the beginning counting with a bracha. That's why in previous times, a lot of poskim recommended that even if a woman wants to volunteer, according to most poskim, women is not obligated in Sfiras Omer. So even if a woman wants to volunteer Sfiras Omer, so she should start counting at the very beginning without a bracha. Because in the olden days, again, women were extremely busy around the house. And they were not necessarily going to remember to count Sfiras Omer every night. So even if she wanted to volunteer to do the mitzvah, she should do it without a bracha. But nowadays,
she remembers to get dinner on the right. table. Why can't she remember to
That's something she does every day. I mean, in the olden days. Okay, so so that's why nowadays, because women are generally, they have work, they have other things to do sometimes, so they're not busy 24/7 taking care of the house. And B, nowadays we have convenient email or text message reminders during Sfiras Omeris. What?
From the OU.
Yeah, so they send it to you, and it's reliable every day. So if there's almost no way that if a woman subscribes to these reminders, or a man, for that matter, that they're going to forget. So therefore, even nowadays, a woman can certainly begin to count Sfiras Omer, no problem, with a bracha, just the same as a man. Okay. But Sfiras Omer can't become undone. The count is there.
Right.
There's nothing you can do to cancel the count. And similarly with Yovel, the Yovel count is ticking, you know, no matter what, no matter if you forget to count the years.
Well, some of you are saying to yourself, let's see, now, if I consider all of the years since I was bar mitzvah and I've been gotten Sfiras Omer, that I probably have messed it up, a majority of the time or something like that, then you should not make a bracha? Likely, if you think that you personally, obviously, you're prone to forget?
So you should subscribe to the reminders.
Okay, right, well.
You could get the reminders.
When you were bar mitzvah, they didn't have email reminders yet. So, okay, so you don't have to count the years that you didn't have reminders. If even with the reminders you find yourself forgetting every year,
you'll forget.
Right, like,
so
like,
then there's
like
what?
Second Seder.
What time does the reminder come in?
Right.
Well, these reminders, what time does it come at night? Come at 9. Okay, fairly close to when you need to do it.
So what you do is, you don't delete it from your...
What?
You
know, the second night of Pesach, can't
read it anyway.
Right, so the... What you should do is you leave it in your inbox. Don't delete it from your inbox until you okay. count. You have to make sure.
It's not
up that second, and you do it.
Okay.
If you can.
Sometimes you get the email reminder on, crazy place. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the second Seder is a problem because some people have the minhag that they don't count Sfiras Omer until after the second Seder is over because it's a little bit of an issue. Because if you're still in the middle of Pesach mode, as if it's the first night of Pesach, so you did Pesach night davening, you're about to go home and do the second Seder, so in the middle you're going to count Sfiras Omer as if it's the night after Pesach. That doesn't make much sense. So you wait until you finished all the Pesach stuff, you're done with that, now we're going to switch to, okay, maybe it wasn't really Pesach, so we're gonna count Sfiras Omer. So that's why some people have the minhag, so that's why some people get out on the first night. Who are insistent on this? If you're going to a seder where that's not the minhag, and you wait till after the seder to count because you think that's your minhag, so then you might get out on the first night. So that's not a good idea. That's why most places you count Sfiras Omer even in shul the second night of Pesach in order to prevent this problem. Okay, so what are we getting at over here? So it says the Tosafot says that that a reason that you don't count make a bracha on Shimon Nikiyam is because we get undone for a zava, which is the normal case nowadays that women treat themselves if they're a zava, or for a zav as well. For a man with an abnormal emission, it's also possible to have an emission in the middle of Shiva Nikiyam that would render the whole thing invalid. And you'd have to start again. So that's why the Shla, famously, the Shla, who was a very great mystic, he was actually a rabbi in Frankfurt in the 17th century. And he said that, well, this is the case that we just don't make a bracha because you might get undone, so don't make a bracha, but count the peh, count every day. If you could get, just maybe, you know, a woman could get extra mitzvah points if she counts every day of Shiva Nikiyam verbally. Today is day one, today is day two, today is day three. Just obviously, you wouldn't make a bracha. So I think some other postgame had a quip about the Shla, that the Shla already did the 613 mitzvos. And he was longing for more, so he invented an extra. He invented an extra mitzvah because to give people opportunities. But for those of us, who are still working on the 613, we don't need these chumras. No, this is a novel thing which is not mentioned in the poskim at all. The Sefer Chinuch is explicitly against it, but no posek before that time mentions it. The poskim nowadays, I'll say you don't have to do the shla. I would imagine that some Chassidish Rebbetzins do the Shla because it says in the Shla, okay? It was a mystic, but we don't do this. So just the Bedikis and the Cheshbening of the correct time to go to the Mikvah is considered the counting of the Shiva Nikiyam. Uchein in Yenze Matzanu Batora Beloshon Zechira. Dichsi Ben Yina Molek Zechira. So this issue of verbally versus not verbally applies also when the Torah mentions remembrance. Well, Dvar Miriam Zechira. Uchsiv Gamken Zechira Binyan Itzias Mizraim. The Torah mentions remembering in a few different places. One is Amalek. Zachar, Isasher Salacha, Amalek. Remember that which Amalek did to you. Remember that what happened, that which happened to Miriam in the desert. And remember the exodus from Egypt every day.
By the way, at the end of Shacharis, you know, there's only. Mm-hmm.
How many of them? Sheish Zechiros.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, now, is that something which is a nice little minhag for people who have the time, you know, at the end of davening to say, or is it, you know, it's not, nobody ever says that, you have an obligation to say that, right?
Well, you don't have to remember those things every day verbally, for sure not.
Yeah.
Maybe the question is, again, it's sort of like this idea before, maybe you get extra mitzvah points every time you mention these things. That's why some people have the minhag to say it every day after davening. The practice. So it's the minhag. Okay, not an obligatory thing. Yeah, most people have enough trouble with the making sure they daven properly in the morning that we don't need to be adding extra things. Right, and to get the work on time, to daven with kavana. So the more stuff you add in is generally counterproductive. Okay. Well, Zichiras Mitzrayim, Ba'asnu Akabala La'asosa Bapeh. So one of these things is not like the other. Of these three things that we just mentioned, the remembrance of the Exodus must be done verbally, must be said verbally. Uchmosham Amru Zichrona Levracha, Bedirkas Emes V'yatziv D'oraisa. That's why there's a suggestion in the Gemara that the bracha after Kriyashma, morning and evening, is D'oraisa, because it mentions explicitly the Exodus. Again, you mentioned also Griyashma. Yeah, you mentioned the end. Okay. You mentioned in the Shema as well, which is a little bit of a problem, but okay. So we don't really necessarily paskin like this, but there is such a suggestion in the Gemara because of this idea that it needs to be said verbally. Ushara Zechiros, the other things that one is required to remember, Dailanu Bahem Bezechiros Halev Bilvad, to remember and to pay attention to these things. Problem, anyone?
Yeah, well, how do you remember it? Believe whatever. How do you, like, you have to apply it? Like what? Like Miriam.
Well,
right?
Miriam, yeah. Miriam. The way you apply remembering Miriam is not to speak Lashon Hara.
Okay.
So if you, it's a kiyum of remembering Miriam. If you are sitting around with a bunch of friends and they say, "Oh, I saw Rivki Cohen today." Whew, I just heard some juicy gossip about Rivki Cohen. Am I going to say it? Miriam.
No,
Miriam. Okay, I'm not going to say it. So that's the key of this. Yeah.
Just an interesting thing. We're encouraged to not talk, to rev ourselves up to not talk Lashon Hara by thinking of a negative example of, about Lashon Hara. And it was, oh my God, Miriam did that. I shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Is it equally effective to think, oh, my friend so-and-so, she never talks Lashon Hara. Think about her, you know.
Yes, in terms of...
I want to be like her and not like...
Maybe. Yes, yes. As far as the mitzvah of Lashon Hara is concerned, whatever works for you to get you not to do it is equally good.
Okay.
But in terms of the mitzvah of remembering Miriam,
okay.
So that wouldn't...
Okay,
right, right, right.
Yeah.
Different focus.
So what's the problem with this? Amalek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't we remember Amalek Bapeh?
Mm-hmm.
Once a year at least?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the Sefer HaChinuch says that...
Remember to forget.
Right, so the... remember not to forget. So the Lo Tishkach. We have to obliterate but not forget. Okay.
Yeah, if you obliterate it, you're going to forget it.
No.
We have to remember not to forget to obliterate.
What?
Okay, so the this is a little bit unclear. The Sefer HaChinuch seems to contradict himself by saying that the remembrance of Amalek must be verbal, but here he says that remembering Amalek does not need to be verbal. Again, according to many Rishonim, strictly speaking, the remembrance of Amalek does not need to be verbal, and it's just a rabbinical institution that we formalize the remembrance of Amalek once a year before Purim via the Torah reading.
Mm.
But it's not actually required on the Raisa level to do that. Other Rishonim go far in the other direction. They say it's a mitzvah deraisa that you have to hear the parsha, you have to remember Amalek by hearing it from a kosher Sefer Torah, you know, during the laning. So that's why we try to be more machmir about hearing Parsha Zohar than we do about any other laning during the year. But according to the simplest understanding of the mitzvah, remembering Amalek is just a general mitzvah not to remember. We'll discuss that, not to forget, I'm sorry, not, but we'll discuss that more in depth when we get to mitzvah. What number is it?
603.
Yeah. 603, so we have a ways to go. It's 10 before the end, right? Okay.
Yeah, it kind of seems that the institution of Amalek is communal mitzvah, whereas every day of the year you make kiyum basically by rejecting those ideas that might is right, and fighting it inside yourself, and that is day.
Okay, you're getting to a Musar Vort. How do we have to fight the Amalek within ourselves, which I believe I've spoken about in Droshes and Parshas Zohar before, but it's not the simple Kiyum HaMitzvah, halachically.
Right, so that's day, but also there's communal mitzvah, I guess, to remember Amalek. That's done once a year.
Right, the Chachamim instituted that should be done communally in the formal manner once a year because of the connection to the Purim and to encourage it within ourselves. Yeah.
Well, it's an individual mitzvah which is fulfilled communally.
Yes, good.
You personally have to, if you miss it, then you have to go and hear it some other time to get
Right, it's also to give the rabbis an opportunity to darshan about it. Okay, which is good. You have to hear drushes about it, and how to apply it to yourselves is very good. But again, it's not the Kiyum HaMitzvah in a strict halachic sense. Midini HaMitzvah, what are the rules? So it didn't start right away when the Torah was given, that the Jewish people did not immediately start counting the years. It started only when they got into the land. You shall sow your field for 6 years, and you shall prune your vineyards for 6 years. So it says it's your field and your vineyard. So since it says that, the Torah implies that it has to be that people are dwelling in the correct place in Eretz Yisrael. So this only started when the Jewish people came in and conquered the land, and each shevet, each tribe, settled in its correct place. It was only then that the clock started ticking for the Yovel, and everybody and the Bezdin only at that point got together and said, today is year one, today is year two, etc. Umishigala Shevet Ruvain Vagad the Chatzi Shevet Menashe Batla Bitzozo. So when the tribes in the Transjordan went into exile, were the first ones to go into exile, so the Yovel already ceased to be the Araisa. Visibly observed, really. The Visha Batla Yovlos Meosos Manve Ilach Shanemar Ukrasem Dror Baaretz Lachol Yoshveha. That all the residents of the land must go free. Mancha kol yoshve alea davka. So it means that yoshve ha, the residents of the land. So we interpret from this that it has to be that the residents of the land are not only present, but are dwelling in the proper places. That each tribe is dwelling in the proper place in Eretz Yisrael. But once those tribes were exiled, even though they were a minority of the Jewish people, nevertheless, the Yovel ceased to be observed. It's a question, which will come into play in a little bit later in the Sefer Chinuch, which is that at the time where the Yovel was not observed, did they still count it? At certain times in history, even though the Yovel was not observed, they used to still count in order to, as a remembrance of the Yovel year, if it wasn't deraisa to count at that point, and then they used to observe the Yovel year. They used to, they used to keep 7 cycles of Shemitah years. Then the 50th year was Yovel. They treated as if it were Yovel, even though it wasn't actually a Yovel year at a deraisa level. And then they would start the Shemitah cycles again. So they kept the Yovel in this calendar,
so
basically.
Because obviously at some point...
The Rambam says that even nowadays, technically, we should be observing the Shemitah based on the Yovel cycle. That, in other words, there should be... there's a machlokas in the Gemara between the Chachamim and Reb Yehuda there about how you count the Yovel years. So, according to the Chachamim, all years are in blocks of 50. So it goes... Shemitah 1, Shemitah 2, Shemitah 3, Shemitah 4, Shemitah 5, Shemitah 6, Shemitah 7, that's 49 years. The 50th year is Yovel. And then the year after that is year 1 for Shemitah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Right.
So the Shemitah will be, the Yovel will be always after 7 cycles of Shemitah years. It will always be the 50th year after the beginning of the right. Shemitah cycle.
In which case we would know today.
Why? Not necessarily.
Because we hold certain years of Shemitah, so obviously that's being...
So right, but you have to know when to start the count.
Yeah.
Ah.
We have to know when, which is the first Shemitah, which is the second Shemitah, which is the third Shemitah.
Ah, okay.
But there's a Shita in the Gemara of Reb Yehuda that Reb Yehuda holds that the Yovel counts
as the first year of
the new cycle.
Yeah.
Ah.
So the Yovel is not a block unto itself, it overlaps with the Shemitah. With the Shemitah
year one
cycle.
Is also year
so that means that in theory, after many cycles of Yovlos, so the Yovel could fall in any year of the Shemitah cycle.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, right.
Right? So we really fundamentally paskin like the Chachamim, that the Yovel is after 49
seven.
Years,
so
and it's
50,
after 7 Shemitah cycles.
50-year units.
Right, blocks of 50-year units, as opposed to the Yovel can float wherever. So if the Yovel can float, so the count doesn't matter for us anymore, because it doesn't really matter where it falls in the cycle.
What do you mean?
So the Rambam says, is in terms of calculating which is the year.
Oh.
So the Rambam says that really, we have some idea of when the Yovel year was, so really you should be calculating the Shemitah years based on this. It should be in blocks of 50. Who says, based on my count, it comes out that the Shemitah year is X. Then the Rambam says, this is one of the few places where the Rambam says, even though I learned the sugya, I pask in a certain way, nevertheless you shouldn't do this. Usually he says, everyone else is wrong and forget them and just do what I say. But he says, this is one of the cases where he said, but this is not the minhag. The Geonim say that at least after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, maybe beforehand at certain periods in history, when the Yovel was not actually observed, so you don't count the Yovel at all. Even if you, certainly if you ask like Reb Yehuda, that's one reason for this, but that's not the reason that he picks for this. But even if you pass like the Chachamim, you don't necessarily have to count the Yovel year at all. So he says, at least since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they've just been counting Shemitah every 7 years. They haven't done this 50-year units at all. They've been counting Shemitah every year. That's the minhag, that's what everybody does. And shalom al Yisrael, and this is what you should do because, fine, yeah.
I missed this, but the Yovel year, does it have the agricultural restrictions of Shemitah?
Yeah, we're gonna.
Well,
yeah,
but then you have 2 years in a row. Then, according to Chachamim, so
you always have 2 years in a row. Yeah.
How are you going to survive? You know, I mean, the
miracles. That's what it says. That in the even in a regular Shemitah year, it's hard to survive. So the previous year is supposed to make enough produce if you observe it correctly. For the 3 years, the Shemitah that year, the Shemitah year, and the following year, until you can get your crop started up again. So one more year, okay? Before the Yovel year, the last whole year will produce enough crops
for
4 years.
Also, if the ownership is shifting around in that year, though, it might not even be the the person who's taking care of the fields might not even be the owner as a yovel, so then that's another complication in terms of maintaining the...
Well, because they'll sell the produce.
Right, but in terms of the person who's responsible for doing it, I mean, you may have a dramatic change.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
I wonder if they could have done like, you know, Yosef did in Mitzrayim during the years of plenty. They just saved up.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. Yeah. But God promises that if we observe the Shemitah and Yovel correctly, that the year before the Shemitah or the year before the Yovel will produce enough.
So the Zionists weren't really from because they had the problem and had to have the Mechira, right?
Yeah, Baba.
Well.
First of all, Shemitah nowadays is not even Deraisa. Okay. According to the way the Pasuk, according to Moshitas. Okay.
You're not wrong.
That nowadays all the Shvatim are mixed together, right? Nobody even knows what Sheva they're from except if you're a Kohen or Levi. At the time where the Yovel is applicable in Eretz Yisrael, it applies also outside the land of Israel. Shnemar Yovel, it is the Yovel. What do you mean it applies outside the land of Israel? There's none of the agricultural rules apply outside the land of Israel. What it means is that specifically about the sending away of the slaves. Theoretically, it's possible to have an Eved Ivri outside the land of Israel, so he has to go free in the Jubilee year. Okay? Oh, you also have the... he'll explain later. Ovizman Shayovel Noeg, at the time when the Jubilee is in effect, Noeg din Eved Ivri. That there, when there's no Jubilee, there is no Eved Ivri at all. You cannot now buy an Eved Ivri. It's not possible. Even if somebody owes you a lot of money, you cannot buy an Eved, stole from you a lot of money and owes you back. So then you cannot take him as an Eved Ivri. V'din batei arecha. What?
Garnish his salary.
Yeah, v'din batei arecha. It's a little different. V'din batei arechoma. A din, which we'll learn about in a few mitzvahs from now, which is that if you sell a house within a city, a walled city, so then you're allowed to redeem it and buy it back within a year. Otherwise, it goes to the new owner and he doesn't even leave in the Ovel. V'din stei charamim, certain types of fields that you can declare to be cherem, holy to God, and now are given over to the Kohanim. U'stei achuza, a regular field, which goes back to the original owner in the Yovel, Umekablin Ger Toshav. Another thing which is not applicable when there's no Yovel is the acceptance of a Ger Toshav, which means a non-Jew who does not convert to Judaism, does not become Jewish, but agrees to observe formally. I mean, all non-Jews are supposed to observe the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, the seven Noahide laws, but he formally goes before the Beis Din and agrees to accept upon himself or herself the Sheva Mitzvahs Bnei Noach, and then is allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael, and we're required to make sure this person has a sustenance and to treat them very well. Benohege Shvius Baretz, and Shemitah is Deraisa, Vashmatas Ksofim Becholmako Minatara. And the remission of debts is applicable in every place, on every place on a Deraisa level, even outside the land of Israel, because that has nothing to do with the land, so it's applicable even outside the land of Israel. Uvizman she'ena yovel noeg, when there's no yovel, which is for the last 2,500 years approximately, ein noegin kol ilu. None of these are applicable. Zulasi shmitas karka b'shviyas, shenoheges v'aretz midivrehem, that shmita is applicable in Eretz Yisrael midirabanan, v'chein shmitas ksofim b'shviyas b'chol makam midivrehem. And again, that all loans are canceled during the shmita year midirabanan outside the land of Israel as well. Ushnas Shemitah Ezohi. What is the Shemitah year? Hachi Asikna b'Maseches Avodah Zarah. Memeim Rei Rav Huna Rei Rav Yoshua b'Perakama. Shehi. Did Rabbi Schwartz talk about this in the shiur? Probably did. Shehi Shnas. What?
Before my time, remember, it took 7 years.
Oh. So this was on Daf Tes. Yeah, it was close to the beginning. Shehi Shnas Yud Zayin Liprat L'das Rashi Zichron El Bracha. So again, we're talking about 5:017. Now we're in 5:778, right? So do the math. So 5:017 is 750.
It doesn't matter. Just 60, subtract 78 minus 17. That's all I get.
Right.
So
61, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Right, so it's 761 years ago. Was what he's talking about. Shnas Yud Zayin Leprat Ledas Rashi Zichron Levracha. So Shnas Yud Ches and 5018 Ledas Rabbeinu Chananel Zichron Levracha. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. We have two different opinions about when the Shemitah is. What are we going to do with this?
Hold both.
How does this happen? First of all, the way this happens is hold both. Oh, we'll get the hold both. So the Gemara says, as I'll tell us, that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in Motzai Shvius, the year after Shemitah. So the question is, there's a difference of opinion between Rashi and Rabbeinu Chananel, how many years the Beis HaMikdash stood. One says, I think, 420, and one says 421. So therefore, you get into the problem based on this exact calculation about which year is the Shemitah year. However, the Minag is like Rabbeinu Chananel. The Minag is like Rabbeinu Chananel. That's the Shemitah that we currently observe. And some say that even Rashi, in the end, agreed Lemaisa with the calculation of Rabbeinu Chananel. So we just observe the Shemitah of Rabbeinu Chananel, and that's the majority opinion as well, the opinion of Rabbeinu Chananel. There was, at the time where the settlement in Eretz Yisrael was sort of growing after the expulsion of Spain, so a lot of Jews, not a lot, but more Jews than had been living there previously, moved to Eretz Yisrael. So there were people who said, oh, there's a machlokes between Rashi and Rabbeinu Chananel about which year is Shemitah year. So we have to observe 2 years of Shemitah.
Oh, you can't do that.
Hold on a second.
Yeah?
You're talking about the Korban of the second Beis HaMikdash, right? You know, the,
yeah.
Well, that's, we know that historically, don't we? I mean, it's like,
78.
Yeah.
We know that, yeah. You know, I mean, you know, that's not a, you know.
Right, right. I think the first Beis HaMikdash also has something to play with. I maybe plays in with this a little bit. We know that too historically. Okay.
Not really. I mean, not to the extent that we do from right. Roman records, things like that. You know,
yeah, but I think it's pretty clear. Mm-hmm. Okay, so there were people in any event in those times after the expulsion of Spain who said we should keep 2 years of Shemitah. So they were promptly put into cherem. They're put into nidu. They're excommunicated. Right. So normally when you wanna, you only get put into cherem when you do things that are inappropriately lenient. Not only do things that are inappropriately astringent, but sometimes, like you say, there's something that's very destructive. That exactly. So that's why the Chachamim at the time said absolutely not. There's no observing 2 years of Shemitah. Besides the fact that nowadays Shemitah is derabanan. Again, according to the majority of opinions, Shemitah is derabanan. So therefore, you can make the argument that it doesn't matter so much because the point is just to make a remembrance. You know, Chachamim say they were supposed to remember how to do Shemitah.
Right.
That when it's the Raisa, we should remember how to do it. So, you know, if the Shemitah is the Raisa, there might be some mystical significance to the exact year that's observed the Shemitah that has to be done properly in order to make the proper tikkunim in the Olamos Alyonim, you know, whatever, however you want to mystically interpret the halachas. But especially nowadays, it's only the Rabbanan, so there's obviously more room to be mekel. Not that it wouldn't be mekel if it was the rice also, but okay, certainly now that it's the Rabbanan. But you have to compound with this, that this opinion of the Rambam, that he thought he calculated correctly which year should be Yovel, even nowadays. So that we should still be counting in blocks of 50. In order to remember again which year is Shemitah, which year is the correct Shemitah, because in order for it to be the correct Shemitah, so it has to fall into the pattern of the 50 years, that there's 49 years in the 50th Yovel, another 49 years in the 50th Yovel. So that's where the Rambam says again that you should follow the accepted practice that was established by the Gonim and that's actually observed by the people in Eretz Yisrael, and you just count 7 years since the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, 7, 7, 7, 7, without taking into account the Yovel at all, and that's the Shemitah that is indeed, in fact, currently observed, and the last Shemitah was in the year Tafshin Ayin Dalad. So next Shemitah year will be Tafshin Pei. 2 years from now. I feel like they creep up on you, you know? Shemitah years. Okay, but in theory, you have at least three different opinions about which year should be the Shemitah year, but we have our accepted, very strong accepted practice. And again, because of this excommunication also, we don't hear about even the most stringent far from people being concerned for more than one Shemitah year, because it's such a well-established practice that, again, was, and the other years were strongly rejected. The whole Indian Shemitah's Ksofim Yisbar Yofim Perik Achron de Masecha Shvias. The whole idea of loans being canceled is explained in the last Perik of Masecha Shvias. B'Hizr Kol Prati Dini Shvias Sham Bosa Masechta B'nu Yalzat is found throughout Masecha Shvias. Vinyan Mitzvah Zo Shi Limnos Hashamnim. So this counting of the year is Zachru Zichron Levracha B'Sifra V'Mekom Masecherim. It's explained in the Halachic Midrashim on the Torah and in other places. It's not that every individual has to count the Shemitah. Today is year one of Yovel, today is year on Rosh Hashanah, today is year two of Yovel. It's counted only in the Sanhedrin. They are the eyes of the congregation. This only applies at the time when the Yovel is in effect, which again has not been for a very, very long time.